We've got something really special for you today, a conversation that I had recently with Dr. Vincent Bacot on Wheaton College campus. He's not only a faculty member there, he's also the creator of a documentary called We Are All Evangelicals, and it has to do with the way that black evangelicals today are integrating and being spiritually formed, both by kind of the white intellectual evangelical movement, but also by the traditional black church. And he's interviewing all the top people, and that documentary is coming your way soon. So stick around for this podcast. Listen carefully. It's a little bit longer than some of our other ones, but it's well worth it. Stay with us here on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
I'm Dr. Vincent Bacot, Professor of Theology and Director of the Center for Applied Christian Ethics at Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois.
Dr. Vince Bacot. Vince, welcome back to the Stone Chapel Podcast.
It's great to be with you.
Today we're updating people on a really interesting film project that you are a part of. So you're the creator of this film. There's a kind of a working title now. We Were All Evangelicals. So let's talk a little bit about this. This is a joint project of whom?
This is a joint project of Wheaton College and Christianity Today.
Now, when we say we were all evangelicals, who are the we?
This is a documentary about black evangelicals. And even then, of course, just like the term evangelical itself is something that is fuzzy around the edges. Mm-hmm. What I mean by black evangelicals, I mean people that to some degree stand between traditional black church and what we might call institutional white evangelicalism. So that may be people who were involved in parachurch ministry or who grew up National Baptist Church of God in Christ or something. They go to college, they're involved in InterVarsity or Navigators or Crew. Mm-hmm. And so it's very formative for them. It brings them into that world. Yeah, it's a world of institutions, a world of publishing, a world of conferences, all that type of thing. And so that's formative for them. And for some of them, they have some kinds of institutional relationships to them. Or if somebody goes to a seminary, for example, that mm-hmm. might be formative for them. Even if they go back to being, say, a Baptist pastor or a Church of God in Christ pastor. But it's been formative for them. They have these relationships. And they wind up in their participation in this evangelical encounter being something that is neither strictly black church nor strictly completely at home in what you might call institutional evangelicalism.
How are they accepted in the traditional black church?
Well, it's less that about whether people are accepted, I think, than recognizing that there are just modes of formation and networks of engagement that are different. So there's something that happens every year that if you're a black Baptist pastor, you know about it. It's called the Hampton Ministers Conference. There might be some people that generally traffic in evangelical context that might go to that. But if you ask most evangelicals about that, they don't know that conference exists. Hmm. Or if you ask them about, you know, when the saints are coming to Memphis, Tennessee, when the Church of God in Christ has their annual meeting, this probably isn't on the radar. So those types of big events are different than if you're talking about, you know, whether it's people who are doing things with the Gospel Coalition or they're going to the Evangelical Theological Society, if it's the academic side of things. Those networks are different ones. There's overlap between those things. Mm-hmm. But generally, it's like you're in different regional domains almost. So a person might say, well, part of my DNA is being National Baptist. That's true of me. I grew up in a National Baptist church. But in college, I was involved with the Navigators, and that's really how I came into this world of evangelicalism. I'd never heard the term. Not until I was involved in the Navigators and, you know, and loving what I was learning in Bible study, etc. Mm-hmm. So the people you're listening to, the books that you're reading, the methods of Bible study that you're doing, a lot of those things, they come from a trajectory that isn't the trajectory that out of which a lot of the formation occurs in, like, say, traditional black church.
So you've got these silos that are doing the same thing. And there's been very little crossover historically.
What I would say is I think if you survey most of your National Baptist churches now and say evangelical, everybody thinks it's a political identity. Because after 2016, people are talking a lot about the term evangelical.
Right.
But it's not what David Bebbington is talking about. Mm. Right? It's not what we meant when I was getting my MDiv at Trinity. And if you're in a lot of traditional black church spaces and people are thinking about going to seminary, they might not first be thinking about going to Fuller or going to Ted's or going to Dallas. Mm. They might instead be thinking about, oh, I should go to Princeton, or I should go to Duke, or I should go to Yale, or some prominent main line space. Mm. What's on your radar is going to be different. And so people who are black evangelicals are people that have this in-between experience. And again, some of them, their formation may begin in traditional black church spaces. But sometimes they may be people who grew up in these Bible churches. And these Bible churches were things that were definitely evangelical and kind of these independent Bible churches where people were doing this very word-by-word kind of exegesis. And a lot of that really goes back to a person that we'll talk about at the beginning of the documentary, a man named B.M. Nottage, who was very instrumental in catalyzing these Bible institutes and in the formation of people like Bill Pinnell, who's a prominent person that we interview.
So you're the creator, but you're not the filmmaker.
Right? I'm not behind the camera. We're working with a guy named Daniel Long, who has his own company called Long Winter Media. And I guess it's important to say that originally, the idea was not to be making a movie. 2008, there's an event at Fuller Seminary with some black evangelicals. And among the people who were there was a man named Ronald Potter, who I'd met in the early 90s. Amid the kind of conversations that we were having, it became very clear to me that Ron had within his head the entire history of black evangelicalism. And I also was pretty certain that it was unlikely that Ron was going to write about it. So I thought, this is really important because not a lot has been written about it, and people need to know about this. And so my original idea was get Ron in front of a camera and say, okay, Ron, just talk. Mm. I'll ask you questions. You just talk, and I draw it out of you. So in other words, I was thinking more of it initially as a kind of archival type of thing.
Mm-hmm. Like an oral history.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We need the information because a lot of the information isn't written. But this is not something that's on the horizon, I would say, probably for a lot of black church people, but also for certainly in institutional evangelicalism, it's probably not very much on the radar. I mean, they may know about certain figures, but they don't really know about this history.
When did it become a documentary?
First, we brought Ron to campus. And by this point, Christianity Today had become a partner. Right? There was that interest. And then together, we brought Ron to campus, fall of 21, and he did a public lecture. And a few hours earlier, I did a two-hour interview with him to try to get all the information in 2 hours. We got to the early 1970s. Soon after we had that, Ed and I talked, and it occurred to us that we needed to talk to more people to fill out the picture more. And I think still even then it was get these voices down, maybe have a website hosted by Wheaton CT that has these excerpts of people you should know, but it wound up turning into something where we needed to talk to more people if we were going to tell the story. And next thing you knew, here we were talking about sort of documentary rather than just merely having talking heads. Mm-hmm. And so the second interview that we did was close to a year later. We interviewed Dr. Bill Pinnell, who taught at Fuller for over 40 years there. And then we were talking about who else to interview, and then it's just gotten bigger since then.
Now, people probably need to know that you're a theologian by training. You teach theology.
Yes,
I think we might have mentioned
correct.
At the top of the hour. Let's talk a little bit about the theology of the traditional black church over against the theology of evangelicalism. Is there a significant overlap? Leaving aside the political stuff of 2016,
correct.
Do those two things sit
well
together?
Here's the thing. As people will see in the documentary and in this reel that we have put together, see, there are people saying, look, the black church has always been, in terms of those markers of evangelicalism, it's pretty much always been that way. Here's a good way to put it. if you go to any black church and you ask people if they believe the Bible, pretty much most of them, there's no question about whether they believe the Bible is completely true. If you ask them about whether people need to have a conversion experience to meet Jesus, they will say that. If you believe that Jesus is the one who's working the cross is saving for us, they believe that. If you believe that is a faith that is to be shared, they'll say it's absolutely a faith that is to be shared. Well, there's your Bebbington Quadrilateral right there. But if you say the word evangelical, it's thought of, I would say, in terms of certain associations with certain figures and institutions that people might think, oh, you mean those fundamentalists, those white fundamentalists.
Okay.
Or you mean those moral majority types or something?
Well, I was thinking about moral majority because a lot of this sort of began with moral majority back in the 1980s, it seems like. A lot of connections started with evangelical. I know the term had been around
longer. The term had been around, but in terms of black evangelicals, if you ask Pinnell, he would say that people were thinking about that term or just thinking about themselves as evangelical in some way in the 60s. So when Pinnell is working with Tom Skinner, Tom Skinner is in the evangelical ethos. I mean, people were thinking, oh, here's this, you know, black Billy Graham of Harlem person, right? And he had a radio program, and he had the support of a lot of white evangelicals, actually, until, surprise, surprise, he starts talking about more than just a vertical relationship to God, and he starts talking about how you have to attend to the horizontal realities. Mm. And of course, coming out of the 60s into the 70s, you know, that's only a few years after you've passed the civil rights laws. There's a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. And there are people who were less enthusiastic about him talking about that.
Yeah.
And so that led people to diminish their support for him.
So as soon as you introduce kind of more of a social gospel.
Well, it's not a social gospel. A gospel that is both vertical and horizontal, a gospel that is like a Lausanne statement kind of gospel, mm-hmm. really. Mm-hmm. And saying you, of course, should be talking about knowing Jesus, having Jesus in your heart, but you should also be a person who is loving your neighbors and thinking about the ways that your neighbors are experiencing the opposite of neighbor love from the society in which they live. Hmm. And so how do gospel people talk about those things?
So it's more than social gospel.
Yeah. People call it social gospel because, yes, you know, that 19th century, early 20th century social gospel, it did make everything imminent. It made everything about, the gospel was all about changing the world, and it went completely horizontal rather and kind of diminished the vertical.
True, yeah.
And I think that created an allergy among fundamentalists, and then those fundamentalists who become, I guess, neo-evangelicals in the 1940s. But then again, Carl Henry writes The Uneasy Conscience of Modern Fundamentalism in 1947, I think it is. Why? Well, because he thinks, well, this social conscience should not be abandoned. And of course, the sad thing is that Henry's book about the uneasy conscience is known because he wrote it, not because it was persuasive.
Okay.
And I mean, if you think about it, I mean, what does happen with people that are neo-evangelicals? They become more intellectually engaged, saying it's okay to go to Harvard or Yale and to get your PhDs and stuff. They're not becoming socially engaged around a lot of these concerns related to race and politics and stuff.
So these are some things you talk about in the film.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes.
So when should we expect this film to arrive?
I would say realistically, look for it in the middle of 2023.
24.
Yeah. Yeah. Can't go backwards.
Do that. Yeah. Now, are you going to show up at some film festivals to sort of preview the movie, you think?
The goal is to do that and also to make it available for screenings at churches. There are people that have already asked for the documentary to be screened at their church when it comes out. Mm. When people have seen this reel that I have shared with them, there's been a lot of excitement about that. We've interviewed a number of people, but we still have another set of interviews to do. Mm-hmm. 5 to 7 or 5 to 10 more interviews.
You're the interviewer.
You've got a great voice
for that.
Well, thank you very much. Now, I do think it's also important to help to explain what narrative I want there to be in this film. So now I am talking like, I guess, a filmmaker. Because you've heard about African-Americans who are in multi-ethnic churches or they're in evangelical institutions, and they're talking about needing to create distance from the evangelical movement. And there's been various books that have critiqued evangelicalism. Not only Jesus and John Wayne. That's probably maybe the most famous one, but there's a lot of books that have been, I call them secret decoder ring books about evangelicalism. And so I think it's important to understand that my goal is not to have a documentary that is mainly about critique and talking about what the problems are. I want people to think about it this way. Number one, let's say you think about it in four chapters, that this is what the dissertation is. Mm-hmm. Chapter one would be, what is this thing called black evangelicalism? What's black evangelicalism? What do people mean by that? Where did it come from? How does this thing emerge? What are the things around which it coalesces? But also maybe what are some of the fault lines within it? So just as the evangelical movement is what I would call a conservative Protestant ecumenism, within black evangelicalism, everybody didn't think about things the same way. Some people are more prophetic. Some people are more just want to, like, let's just teach the Bible types. So you have that even within black evangelicalism. So what is it? Then the second chapter, what are some prominent events? And really, a lot of that would be focusing on how the 1970 Urbana Conference was huge, because Tom Skinner gave the closing address to that. And that was catalytic for awakening, arguably, a lot of white evangelicals to things that they just hadn't thought about. But also you want to talk about how there was the missed opportunity in the middle 1990s when there was all the talk about reconciliation, which wound up being a sentiment without a strategy. And then, of course, you have to talk about arguably the dark night of the soul, if you will, that kind of emerges in 2016. Among the ways that that was a challenging moment for evangelicalism, part of that fallout is also around the dissonance that many people involved in some aspect of black evangelicalism or the larger just evangelical institutions, people having dissonance within them. So you want to talk about those episodes, and say that's chapter two. Chapter three would be talking about what are perennial challenges and what are things that have improved. So some of the things that people have talked about since 2016 are a lot of the same things that people were talking about in the 60s and 70s when they were engaging with white institutional evangelicalism. So some things are wash, rinse, and repeat. Other things, there are things that have improved. Exhibit A, the person who is talking to you. How many African-Americans were there with PhDs in theology, biblical studies, etc.? Here I'm at Wheaton College. I teach here, Esau Macaulay. This was very, very rare. In fact, it was even rare in the 90s when asking a lot of these questions. You've had things that have improved. You've had things like we just released a historical review about race, and it's a public document. We acknowledge some positive things, but a lot of things that didn't go so well. We didn't act like an institution that has for Christ and his kingdom, you know, as our motto.
Or started by an abolitionist in a way.
Exactly,
right?
All those types of things. Would somebody be doing a historical review 20, 30 years ago? That might have been a hard ask. Mm-hmm. You know, we wound up doing it. So there are things that have happened. Things are not just as they were, even though there may be things that at times people may feel like, are we spinning our wheels? Are we back where we were in the 60s or 70s? But if you ask Pinnell, if you ask Stan Long, another person that we interviewed about this, they would all tell you that there are things that have improved. But they would also say that there are things that are perennial challenges. So that's chapter three. Chapter four is the thing that's one of the most important things I want for the documentary, which is for people to understand the opportunity that is here now for this unique, if you will, tradition of black evangelicalism. Because if you're neither just traditional black church, and if you're not just doing, quote unquote, the evangelical thing institutionally, if you're something in between, arguably you kind of have your foot in both places, maybe, there's something unique here. So the people who fit this, and they might even be people that are not involved in evangelical institutions now, but it is part of their formation. Or they might be in a black church now, but it is part of their formation. That formation makes them people who do have something unique to offer to the church that you're not going to just get from white evangelicalism and you're not going to just get from traditional black church. That this unique thing to offer. What's that opportunity? What baton is being handed to my generation and those behind me, to the coming generations, about the opportunity that there is for your own life of faithfulness?
Great
it doesn't
question.
Have to be, I'm not going to stick it out in institutional evangelicalism. That's not the question I'm interested in. I want just the opportunity to steward this unique formational reality that a lot of people have had. People who come to Wheaton College that didn't even know that there was such a thing as an evangelical institution, I want those people, even if they never participate in an evangelical institutional space again, to use that and to own that. And that is going to make a difference, and it's going to make something unique about what their life of faithfulness is going to be. And so I want that opportunity to be how we talk about ending the film, so that we're talking about something that's hopeful, not because we're being Pollyannas, but because there is something unique here that can serve the church and really be a good news Christianity.
That is terrific. Now, we're out of time. If people want to know more about this, should they be in touch with you at this point?
Yes, they should be in touch with me. I'm happy to share with anyone our reel. I don't want to call it a trailer because we haven't interviewed everybody, but it does give a flavor of the story we're trying to tell. So me at vincent.baycoat@wheaton.edu. We're looking for contributors as we continue to try to fundraise. And there is a one-click link that people can have where you go, it goes straight to the Black Evangelicalism Project. Yes.
I'm excited about the film. I'm excited about you as a creator. Dr. Vincent Baycoat, great to see you here on the Stone Chapel Podcast.
Oh, it's great to be here. Thanks so much.
You know, here on the Stone Chapel Podcast, we do a variety of things, and this documentary is one that I think you need to know about, and it's coming your way probably in the year 2024. So look for that. Thanks to Vincent Baycoat for being with us today on the podcast and telling us about it. We wish them well, and if you want to be in touch with him, you can do that by visiting his website at Wheaton College. Send you maybe a link or to a trailer. Thanks to all those who help us make this podcast possible. Thanks especially to Kathy Capes for her recording and her editing. We look forward to bringing you these podcasts every week. They drop every Tuesday, so subscribe to this podcast. Join us regularly for what we're doing. We've got some exciting conversations coming your way here on the Stone Chapel Podcasts.